Good evening and welcome. The theme of the talk this evening is on mindfulness, how it's very straightforward but not easy. You might have found that in the last 24 hours. And how the attitudes we bring to our practice and to our experience are really of great importance on this path of awakening, in this kind of path to the end of suffering that the Buddha taught. I think there are three key elements to mindfulness. Just begin a little bit in the head and move towards, hopefully, towards the heart. But just identifying them may be helpful. One is the intention we bring, and we've spoken about this, kind of the intention that sets us off on our journey, kind of where are we going, what's important to us, that kind of brings that sense of motivation, that sense of direction. The second is attention, kind of focusing our mind, shining the light of attention on our direct experience. And what am I aware of? What am I experiencing right now? And the third is the attitude or attitudes that we bring to our experience, which is more, what are the qualities that I'm bringing to this experience, to this moment? You know, what are the attitudes? Is it judgment? Is it anger? Is it resistance? Or is it kindness? Is it acceptance? Is it kind of a wholehearted acceptance of this moment as it is? And I believe that intention really sets us out on our path or on our journey. Then we shine the light of attention, on what is present here and now. Just noticing in this moment, you know, what is present? Tiredness, little achiness, vibrancy, joy, whatever is here. And meeting what's present with an attitude of receptivity, with kindness, with acceptance, with interest, with curiosity. If I give you a definition of mindfulness from a well-known meditation teacher who wrote a book called True Refuge, mindfulness is the intentional process of paying attention without judgment to the unfolding of moment-to-moment experience. So intentionally paying attention in a particular way, those three qualities. The Buddha taught that mindfulness is a direct path to liberation. We bring a non-judging awareness to what is arising in the body and in the heart and in the mind. So it's very clear, mindfulness leads to seeing clearly, which leads to liberation, freedom from suffering. You could put the formula very simply. What could be easier? Pay attention to your experience as it's unfolding. Straightforward enough, right? Pay attention to your experience as it's unfolding. The bodily sensations, whatever emotions are present, the thoughts arising in the mind, everything that's around in the environment, the sounds coming in, the images, the smells, the tastes. Simply be aware of them, watch them come and go, and see that they all change, that they can't be held on to, and that they don't define who we are. They're not I or mine. These are kind of impermanent changing processes. So that's really a formula. Boom, you're enlightened. You know, just that awareness, that non-judging awareness of your experience as it is here and now. So I could ask how many people have become enlightened over the last 24 hours. There's still four more days to go. It's easier said than done, you know, that the practice is, it's often said, it's simple but not easy. You know, that just saying that, you could use different words, but essentially be aware of your experience as it is, without judging it, with acceptance. And just see what how it unfolds, not holding on to anything. This is what the Buddha taught was the direct path to freedom from suffering. But has anyone here found that it's not quite so easy? Maybe one or two. It's a given that there's much that will pull us away from our experience, that will get us caught up in worrying about the future, ruminating on the past, getting angry or judgmental, wanting what we don't have, not wanting what we do have. Where we get caught up in the content of our experience, where we're identified with it rather than aware of it. Has anyone experienced any of those things? Yeah. There's a lot that takes us away from our direct experience. So it's easy, one thing to say, you know, just pay attention to your experience as it is, without judgment. But it's another, in practice, it's more of a challenge. And I think it's helpful to understand some of the reasons why it's difficult to be present and the ways in which we leave ourselves, we leave the present moment. And we've learned a lot in the last couple of decades through brain science about what takes us away from the present moment and how we suffer when we leave our present experience. I'll just talk a little bit about some of the science, not for too long. But one thing to say is that we've inherited brains and bodies and nervous systems from evolution that can get us into trouble. You know, we all want to be happy, and yet the way we go about being happy often leads us to suffering. You know, we might for example, get into planning and worrying about the future, stressing or getting anxious about things that might happen. And when we do that, we're acting out an evolutionary tendency to plan. It's a helpful thing for us in many ways. But when we fixate on the future and all the bad things that could happen, our brain works against us. You know, we get caught up in anxiety and with stress. So we have these tendencies, but without awareness, they get us into trouble. You might have noticed that the suffering and the stress that you experience in your life is very often not a one-time thing. You know, if we just occasionally, once in a while, we got angry, that would be one thing. But when we are constantly, that's our mode of responding, or we're judgmental, or we're anxious, or we're craving all the time. That's the process that gets us into trouble. You might have found it in your experience, getting angry with your partner or your kids, judging yourself harshly, or gossiping, or overeating, or drinking too much, spending a lot of time online, procrastinating. It's all these ways in which we can get caught up in habitual behaviors that lead to suffering. It's interesting to see these processes because I believe much of our suffering does come from patterns of mind that we keep doing over and over again, habits that we keep repeating. Have you found that? Is that something that sounds familiar to you or looks familiar, experienced in this way? You know, if we're judgmental, it tends not to be just a one-time thing, oh, we're judging. The mind goes in that direction. I'm not good enough. Or we're judging other people. They're always like this or like that. And it's, I think, helpful to understand what's going on in our brains and in our nervous systems, just to get a sense of that it's not quite so much about me or about you. It's much more about these processes and how they've evolved. Once we do something frequently enough under consistent conditions, the behavior becomes a habit. What happens is it gets assigned to a different faster acting brain process. And then it gets spurred by contextual cues, where you are, who you're with, how you're feeling. And it gets triggered in that way. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're sitting at home and you're feeling a bit sad. You're feeling blue or you're feeling lonely. You wish you had more friends or you wish you were in a relationship. So you feel like, oh, I need some comfort right now. So something, or you think, oh, I've got the Cherry Garcia in the fridge, the freezer. You know, or I've got the Rocky Road, or I've got the bottle of wine, or I've got the cookies, or whatever it might be, maybe, or there's the internet is available to me, you know. And once we do that, then it kind of increases the likelihood that the next time that I'm feeling I'm the same place, you know, feeling more or less in the same way, that my mind will go to the same thing. Oh, I got comfort from that when I did it last time. And the brain gets kind of attuned to that. Next time you're feeling sad or lonely, your mind goes to the ice cream, to the fridge, the bottle of wine, whatever. And once you've repeated the action enough times, the behavior moves from being a conscious and intentional choice, which it is at the beginning. I'm going to go to the fridge to get some, freezer to get some ice cream. After a while, it becomes something that gets triggered by the environment and by the feeling. So the brain links the stimulus of the emotion, feeling sad, feeling lonely, and the place and the context, being home alone, with the relief that comes from the ice cream, how the reward that came from that. And then a pathway develops in our brain. The repeated actions change our brain's wiring. Actions that begin as conscious and intentional become automatic and unconscious. The psychologist Donald Hebb said over 60 years ago, you may have heard this, neurons that fire together, wire together. And that's basically a description of this process, of we repeat actions in consistent context, then they become automatic. We're not each time saying, okay, I'm feeling this, I'm going to, you know, they become not so intentional and more automatic. The Buddha said something similar 2,500 years ago. He said, what you frequently think about and ponder on, this becomes the inclination of your mind. So where your mind goes, what you think about, then that conditions your mind really. And how our future, what we do now affects how we're going to feel in the future and how we are in the present comes from choices we've made in the past. So that sense of we create our future by how we're meeting this moment. And once they're established, these habits of mind can be hard to change, even with our best intentions, because when our intentions come into conflict with these faster, more instinctual reactions of the brain, it's the faster, more instinctual reactions that win out. So in order to not keep repeating old habits, to not keep going into judgment of ourselves or getting angry with our partner or worrying about the future, we really need to pay attention. We need to bring awareness to our experience as it is right now. This awareness really makes what is unconscious and habitual conscious and subject to choice. So that's what we're doing. So this is just an example of how our brains and our evolution really can get us into trouble if we are not aware of our experience. We just keep acting out old patterns, old habits, and we wonder why things don't change. You know, the key to the change is the awareness, bringing a kind, non-judging awareness to our experience as it is. One of the things that I've learned over the last few years as I've become more interested in how our brains work and how we've kind of how we're affected by evolution is that it's moved me to greater compassion and understanding for myself and for others. I come to see it more as it's not so much about me or you. It's much more about, you know, how we've evolved as a species. And this doesn't deny that we, our personal responsibility. I can choose, you can choose how we respond. But it helps to understand what's going on for us and how it can be so difficult to just be present with our experience as it is. So it's a given that we'll get caught up, we'll get identified, we'll get distracted, we'll lose contact with the present moment and with ourselves. And this is why this training the mind and the heart is key. Mindfulness helps us step out of these conditioned responses into the aliveness of the present moment. We can state it very simply with two questions. What am I aware of? And how am I meeting this moment? So just notice right now, what are you aware of? In the body, in the heart, in the mind? You know, what's going on? The thoughts that might be present? Bodily feelings? Any emotions or mood that's here? What am I aware of? And how am I meeting this moment? What is the quality of heart and mind that you are bringing to this moment? So, coming back to these kind of three elements of mindfulness, intention, the first, sets us on our journey. Without a clear intention, we just get swept along like flotsam on the water. Intention gives us our sense of direction. It helps us to remember what is most important. And as the great sage Yogi Berra said, if you don't know where you're going, you'll end up someplace else. If you don't know where you're going, you'll end up someplace else. I'll do a short meditation here on intention, and we've had a reflection yesterday kind of on our aspiration. But just take a few minutes now. Just sitting comfortably, a relaxed posture, with a sense of ease. Let yourself settle. Relaxed and alert. Just reflect on your deepest intentions for yourself, for your life, for this world. What is your deepest wish for yourself? It might be to be truly happy, to be in a loving relationship or relationships, to live in a compassionate and loving world. Just see what comes up for you. And imagine now that you're living this way, that you're embodying these aspirations. And let yourself experience whatever feelings, sensations, emotions that are present. Let yourself feel them. Just embodying this aspiration, this wish for yourself, for your life, for the world. And now ask yourself, what, if anything, gets in the way of embodying and living from this deepest wish for yourself and for the world? Is there a behavior, you know, speaking unkindly or acting unwisely in one way or another? Or a pattern of thought, getting angry or judgmental or spacing out, that prevents you from living according to your deepest aspirations, or that causes you stress or suffering? What, if anything, gets in the way? What is an obstacle or a hindrance to really living from this deepest aspiration, living with peace or with ease or joy or whatever that wish is? What gets in the way? And if something comes up for you, maybe it's something that's already obvious in your life, is this something that it would be helpful to bring attention to really explore, open to, bring a loving attention to over this time, this retreat? So when you're ready, just opening your eyes, coming back into the room. From this place of intention, kind of setting our direction or course, touching into what matters most, we bring attention to our direct experience, what's here, what's present here and now. And because so much of in our conditioning and in our habits takes us away from the present moment or encourages us in some way to move away from our direct experience. You know, the habits of wanting or the habits of aversion or the habits of spacing out. Because we tend to have these tendencies, the habits, it's really important to have a training, have a practice that helps us to be present, to cultivate presence. Probably all of us have had thousands, perhaps more, moments of not being present, kind of being AWOL from our direct experience, from our lives, of being caught up and identified with something that we're wanting or something that we want to get rid of, something we want to escape from, rather than being present for our experience, for our lives. So it takes a training, it takes a practice to open to our experience, to pay attention, to cultivate this power of attention. 125 years ago, William James said, "The faculty of voluntarily bringing back a wandering attention over and over again is the very root of judgment, character, and will. An education which should improve this faculty would be the education par excellence." So this is the education that we're doing. Would that it were more widely available in the world or accessible in schools and other places, more so now. Just this faculty of bringing back a wandering attention, paying attention, learning how to be present, you know, amidst all the stimuli and all the habits that take us away and the things that say this is much more exciting than being here with your experience, to train ourselves in this way. So it takes a training, takes practice to open to our experience, to use the breath as a focus, or sound, or bodily sensations, or other object to focus our minds. So we cultivate the art of being present here for our experience. Here is something that Al Pacino said about appearing one time. He appeared in a play, on stage. He said, I made connection with a pair of eyes, and I thought, this is incredible. These eyes are penetrating me. I went through the whole performance just relating to those eyes, giving the whole thing to those eyes. When curtain call finally came, I looked in the direction of those eyes, and it was a seeing eye dog. I couldn't get over it. The compassion and intensity and understanding in those eyes, and it was a dog. So probably many of you who are dog owners might not be so surprised, but it's a lovely kind of description of that power of attention, and it was a dog. It was a dog. So when we pay attention, as we've spoken about, we inevitably get caught up in thought. We go into planning, we go into ruminating, we go into problem solving, we go into daydreams. We have so many ways that we can move away from our direct experience into thoughts. And, you know, as we've emphasized, thinking isn't a problem. You know, we can befriend this tendency of the mind to move into thought. Just be aware, oh, this is what the mind does under certain conditions and under certain, you know, habits of mind where we've gone away or we're worriers or we're planners or we're ruminators. That's kind of where our minds tend to go. And just to see it as this natural, not this maybe habitual tendency of our mind to move away from the present moment, and that we can just keep coming back. Just coming back again and again. And when we do that, we're retraining our brain. We're creating new pathways in the brain, or we're strengthening pathways in the brain that help us to be more present. And if we've escaped, we've moved into thought thousands of times, it will tend to take some practice, beginning again and again, coming back again. And so not to make that into a problem. Oh, my mind was so busy, I couldn't pay attention. But just to notice that that's the weather system. That's what's present. And the more we can meet that experience with kindness and with care and with attention and without judgment, the more we can just see that it's happened and then come back again. Retrain our minds. Cultivate this quality of being here now. So intention and attention, we cultivate the intention that sets us on our path. We pay attention to our experience. And the third element really is the one I want to focus on for the rest of the talk, and that is the attitudes we bring to our experience, the attitudes of mindfulness. The attitudes of heart and mind that we bring to what's arising here and now. So just to say what an attitude is, it's really the quality or disposition with which we meet our experience. So we can have the same thing happen. Let's say we get some bad news or somebody cuts us off on the freeway. And our level of stress and suffering could be radically different depending on our attitude. Imagine those experiences being met on one hand with anger or resistance, and on the other hand with kindness and acceptance. So the Buddhist teachings and Western psychology both teach that we can cultivate attitudes, that we can train ourselves to be more generous, to be more kind, to be more accepting, or we can train ourselves without awareness to be more greedy, to be more distracted, to be more angry. So what are the qualities, or some of the qualities, or attitudes of mind and heart that are most supportive of being present, that help us to be here, to be present, that help us to wake up, to see things as they really are, to let go of clinging? What are the qualities, the attitudes that are most helpful to do this. And we could name a number of different attitudes, and they're all very helpful. Bringing an attitude of humor to our experience can be very helpful. Just seeing the light side of, oh, there I go again, can be really helpful. Cultivating patience can be really valuable, and just being able to meet our experience, give some space to our experience. Cultivating, John Kabat-Zinn in his book on mindfulness-based stress reduction talked about non-striving. You know, just cultivating a kind of an easy attitude to our experience, not trying to get somewhere, not judging our experience. Being trusting in things as they're unfolding. Many different qualities that we can, or attitudes that we can bring to our experience. But there's three that I want to highlight, which I see as really keystone qualities that support mindfulness and support waking up. And these three keystone attitudes or qualities are acceptance of our experience as it is, meeting our experience with kindness, and curiosity, being really interested in our experience as it's unfolding. I think these three qualities encompass many of the others that I mentioned. You know, if we can meet our experience with acceptance, with kindness, and with interest, I think with these qualities, it can really transform the way that we meet our experience. And it can be really, these attitudes, I think, can be a pathway to great freedom of the heart. So what I'd like to do is just to look at these each in turn and reflect a little bit on them and do some pausing and paying attention to them as we're going. Beginning with the quality of acceptance. Acceptance of our experience is, I think, at the core of mindfulness, of mindful awareness. You might have noticed that when you resist how things are, resist your life as it's unfolding, that you suffer. You know, what Jung said, what we resist persists. You know, we try and push things away, but there really isn't an away. You know, they remain around. So this quality of acceptance, meeting our experience with acceptance, is really taking refuge in the Dharma, which Jonathan talked about last night, one of the three refuges, the second of the three Buddhist refuges or jewels. It's finding our ground, our security, our safety in the truth, in the way things are. They may not be the way that we wanted them to be, and often they're not. But when we meet our experience with acceptance, we really transform the experience. Rather than it being, particularly if it's a difficult experience, rather than it being a problem or something we need to change, it becomes just more like something that's arising and passing. Acceptance is really making peace with the present moment, making peace with your experience. There's a lovely poem by Dorothy Hunt and a couple of lines from from the poem. It's called Peace, or Peace is this moment without judgment. She says, peace is this moment without judgment, this moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. Peace is this moment without judgment, this moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. So what is there preventing you, me, any of us, preventing this moment from being a moment of peace, a moment of freedom? You know, what's in the way right now? So acceptance is the heart of mindfulness. It's the heart of waking up fully to our lives. We can't really begin this process of waking up to our lives without bringing acceptance to this moment as it's unfolding. So you can notice what you're feeling here and now. You might be tired or you might be calm. You might be excited or angry or peaceful or achy, confused, happy. all of these states, whatever is here now, arises out of causes and out of conditions, out of the past. Some of these tendencies we may have got from our parents, from our ancestors, from our family upbringing, from our community, from our culture. Others from our choices we've made in the past. You know, if somebody is kept saying to you, you know, you're not good enough, it's probably likely that that message will be in your brain and you'd be saying to yourself, no, I'm not good enough. I've really got to work hard to be better and, you know, to be judging yourself in that way. So there's many causes and conditions for why what is here right now is here. And it can be helpful to understand and learn from these experiences. But we can't change the reality of how life is now, how this moment is. You know, there's an inevitability about this moment. I mean, I use that word carefully. Anthony de Mello, the Jesuit scholar, writer, teacher, said, freedom is absolute cooperation with the inevitable. Absolute cooperation with the inevitable. And really that's, you know, what is here right now. Sometimes we use the word inevitable, meaning it had to happen. But here, it means really more like the Spanish, inevitable, unavoidable. It's here. We can't avoid it. It's the truth of this moment. So how are we meeting the truth of this moment? So we can't change this moment. If you're tired right now, tiredness is present. If you're bored right now, boredom is present. But what you can do is you can change how you relate to the experience. And that is the freedom that the Buddha taught, pointed to. We can change what is here comes from causes and conditions, from what has happened in the past, what we've choices we've made, etc. We can't change the fact that this moment is like this, but we can change how we respond to it. We can choose to respond to our experience with judgment, with anger, it should be different, I don't like this, or we can say, it's like this. This moment is like this. We can meet it with acceptance, what Tara in her first book called radical acceptance, a deep-rooted saying yes to this moment as it is here and now. So a key question we can ask is, how am I meeting this moment? With acceptance or with resistance? And we can cultivate this quality of deep-rooted, genuine acceptance. Can I meet this moment? Can I meet my life? Can I meet myself here and now with genuine acceptance? So you might just reflect for a moment. We won't do this as a meditation, but just reflect on, is there something calling for acceptance right now? What is arising that's calling for acceptance? Maybe that's difficult for you to accept. Maybe it's physical pain or discomfort. Maybe there's sleepiness, as a number of people have reported. Is there something that you want to be different? Some aspect of your life or someone in your life that you want to change? How would it be to bring true acceptance to this experience or this feeling or this situation or this person? How would it be to wholeheartedly say yes to what is? Say yes to what is. And if it doesn't feel possible, at least have the intention to say yes to what is. This isn't to say we never change what is present, but if we can do it from a place of acceptance, deep-rooted acceptance of this moment, then it's a wise and discerning change rather than coming from reactivity or craving or resistance. So what is calling for acceptance right now? You might just reflect on this as, you know, as the time unfolds. Is there something that you're meeting with resistance or with judgment or with harshness or with escaping from the present moment. What's calling for acceptance? What's calling to be met with acceptance? So this first quality of acceptance. The second key quality, kindness, I think is an essential attitude of mindfulness. It's meeting yourself and your experience with an open and loving heart. Kindness opens the space that allows us to meet and hold painful and difficult experiences. It allows us to hold our experience and that of others with an open heart. Kindness recognizes our common humanity, that we all suffer, that we all make mistakes, that we all want to be happy. Think of kindness as the attitude that you'd bring to a small child who's fallen over and hurt themselves. You know, that sense of, what can I do? Can I do anything to help? What can I do to help? So how would it be to meet whatever is arising in your own body and heart and mind with this attitude of kindness, with this attitude of loving kindness? It's the attitude that you saw some people on the Greek islands meeting with care and compassion the boats filled with Syrian refugees. You know, it's the gesture of putting your hand on your heart and saying, I care about this suffering. Or may I accept myself just as I am? It's not always easy. Many of us are prone to self-judgment, self-criticism. I met recently with a student who remarked on how difficult it was to be kind to herself. Whenever she tried to be kind to herself, she said, what comes up right away in my mind is, who am I to deserve that? I haven't earned it. You know, we sometimes feel that we have to earn, that we haven't been good enough to be kind to ourselves. How would it be to be kind to ourselves as just a human response, particularly to suffering, meeting our suffering, meeting our difficulties with compassion? So kindness counters negative patterns of thought. So if while you're meditating, a judgment comes up, I'm so lazy, or I'm so unfocused, or I'm so judgmental. Or if anger arises towards somebody, you can simply name that as judging or anger and meet your own response with as much kindness and self-compassion as possible. You could put your hand on your heart and say forgiven, or peace, or may I be happy. So how would it be to meet whatever is arising, particularly the painful and the difficult experiences, with this quality, this attitude of kindness, with acceptance and with kindness, accepting that this moment is like this and meeting it as we would our dearest friend who's suffering or a child who's in pain, just meeting our own experience in this way. And as you bring kindness to your own experience, space will open in your heart, allowing you to meet the suffering of others with compassion as well. Naomi Shihab Nye in her poem expresses this. She says, before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. So cultivating this quality, this attitude of kindness to ourselves and to our experience. And if we don't practice kindness towards ourselves, mindfulness can reinforce the sense that, oh, I'm a flawed person. And you think, oh, I have to get rid of the bad parts of myself. I have to change these. Mindfulness can become a self-improvement project. But with kindness, mindful awareness will help you open to the fullness of your humanity and see your experiences less personally. It can allow you to forgive yourself when you lapse into old habits or you fall short of your objectives. You can come back to your intentions again without the baggage of guilt or without self-recrimination. So just take a minute now, if you'd like to close your eyes, and just notice, just bring awareness to your experience. Notice what's present and meet it with kindness. Just notice, is your attitude to your experience one of kindness? Or is there resistance to being kind to yourself and what you're feeling? And if you feel resistance, see if you can meet that with kindness, meet the resistance or the judgment with kindness. It's helpful putting your hand on your heart, just caring about this suffering, this pain. Just breathing a wish of kindness for yourself, accepting this moment as it is and meeting it with kindness, with care, with compassion. Letting the container of loving awareness be large enough to hold whatever you're experiencing. You know, that nothing is outside of the field of loving awareness. You know, even the most harsh judgment or the strongest, most bitter anger you're feeling, if you can just bring awareness to it, hold it, let the container of loving awareness be large enough to hold this too. So just coming back, if your eyes are closed, opening them up again, and just coming back and reflecting now on the third of these qualities, which is the quality of or attitude of curiosity. Curiosity is such an important quality in this practice, and I think in our lives. You know, it's so easy to go for our minds, you know, particularly when we're so stimulated by, you know, all of the things that are saying, you know, oh, get excited about this. We can get caught up in, you know, feel bored by sitting quietly, you know. And curiosity is the quality of being interested in what's occurring. It arises naturally out of paying attention to your experience in a non-judging way. And it's a quality that we can cultivate, consciously cultivate. What happens is when we bring curiosity to our experience, when we investigate something, we move out of identification with it. We're not caught up in it in the same way. Or we're not caught up in a story in our minds. We come back to our direct experience. What am I aware of right now? So we might be caught up in harsh judgment, for example, of ourselves or others. But once we bring curiosity to the harsh judgment, we're no longer caught up in the harsh judgment. We're now aware of judging, of judgment. Oh, this is judgment, or a very strong feeling of judgment. Do you get the difference of like being caught up? If you're caught up in anger, you know, caught up in road rage, you know, oh, how you could do that, but then you have enough presence of mind to bring awareness, oh, wow, I'm really angry. You know, I'm feeling, what am I feeling? I'm tight, my breath is short, my face is hot, I've got these murderous thoughts in my mind. You know, you can bring awareness to all of that, but you're not caught up in it. It's that interest, that awareness that allows us to really step out of that, you know, of being identified, being caught up in our experience. Even boredom. You know, if you bring curiosity to boredom, you're no longer bored. You know? You know, I sit there, oh, bored, oh, boredom, boring. But then you kind of, oh, be interested in boredom. Oh, how does boredom feel? Oh, it's, you know, some stories in the mind, probably some collapsing feelings in the body. Be really interested in boredom, and you're no longer bored. You've become curious. You know, so just shifting the attitude in that way. In the same way, anything that seems banal or humdrum can reveal hidden depths when you shine the spotlight of your attention on it. The writer Henry Miller described this shift in attitude. He said, "The moment one gives close attention to anything, even a blade of grass, it becomes a mysterious, awesome, indescribably magnificent world in itself. The moment one gives close attention to anything, even a blade of grass, it becomes a mysterious, awesome, indescribably magnificent world in itself." So it's like curiosity brings the world to life. It brings it into aliveness, into vibrancy. You know, out of the story that our mind is telling us, it's not so interesting, it's boring. You know, be curious about your experience. Let's just do a short meditation. And the invitation here, to sit, close your eyes, is to bring awareness fully to three breaths. And just notice whatever you're experiencing. How would this breath be if you knew it was the last one of your life? How curious would you be? So just noticing how it is to really bring awareness to just to the simple experience of breathing, just these three breaths. So the next time you're experiencing a difficult emotion, try turning the same curiosity towards the way you feel. Rather than being swept up in the emotion, examine, bring interest to the strong energies that are present. How do they manifest in your body? Is it as tightness or tension or heat or flushing? Do they get stronger or do they get weaker? Do they stay pretty much the same? Do they move around? Do they change from one feeling or one emotion to the other, to another? So just bringing this quality of curiosity to our experience. So accepting this moment as it is right now, as it's unfolding, meeting it with kindness and meeting it with interest, with curiosity, kind of this quality of, you know, what am I aware of right now? Breaking through that kind of trance of the mind of, you know, I'm not really here, I'm not really interested. You can ask yourself, what am I not accepting? What am I not being kind towards in my experience? What am I not being curious about? Can we just do another short meditation as we move towards the conclusion? And this is just a meditation on attitude more broadly. And this will be just 5 minutes or so. Just to sit comfortably. Allow yourself to just be relaxed, as relaxed as you can be right now. And let your attention come into your body. Be inviting your body to relax. Invite a softening of any area where you're holding tension. And open to whatever you're experiencing in an accepting and a non-judging way. And if it helps ground you, maintain a relaxed awareness of your breathing. And just bring awareness to your experience and notice right now what your attitude is. Is there a feeling of being on the way somewhere? or moving into the future of what may be happening a little bit later? Or are you tensing or defending yourself against something, shutting yourself down? Are you resisting this experience? Or does your relationship to this moment feel friendly and kind? Is there a quality of welcoming and allowing what's present to be here? Or is there an attitude of pushing away your experience? So just bringing awareness to your attitude or your attitudes just as they are in this moment. And you can check in your meditation. How am I meeting this moment? What is my attitude? Is there acceptance? Am I meeting this moment with kindness? Is there a quality of interest, of curiosity in what's unfolding? And if you do meet what you experience as resistance or clinging or judgment, see if you can evoke an attitude of kindness to yourself and your experience. You could put your hand on your heart and say, "May I be at peace. May I be happy." Consciously say yes to whatever you're experiencing by accepting and welcoming, allowing what's present to be just as it is. It can be helpful to bring a half smile to the corners of your mouth and eyes. Just offering the welcoming attitude of a smile to whatever arises, whatever's present. And when you're ready, just coming back, opening your eyes again. And just to finish up is to say that it's this attitude of receptivity, of meeting whatever is present with kindness, with acceptance, with interest, that allows us to work with the hindrances that arise in meditation and in our daily lives. You know, the five hindrances, the wanting mind, the "I wish I had this right now," and the feeling of aversion, pushing away. "Oh, it's too hot, it's too cold," or "this person is too noisy, they're breathing too loud." You know, the hindrance of sloth and torpor that a number of you have spoken about. You know, the tiredness, the lethargy, with the second arrow. "Oh, I don't like this, I don't want it to be like this." The restlessness and the worry, the kind of agitation, the anxiety and the worry about the future, the fourth hindrance. And doubt, you know, does this really work? Everyone else can do this, but I can't, you know. Just meeting these hindrances, these habitual energies of life, you know, they're not wrong for appearing. They're lawful. They come up under certain conditions. So to meet them with kindness, with acceptance, with curiosity. Eckhart Tolle said, "Whatever you accept completely, you go beyond." So meeting this quality, this your experience with acceptance, with kindness, with curiosity. I invite you to just explore these qualities and these attitudes in your practice over this time. You know, as you feel inclined, you know, is there acceptance? Am I accepting this moment or am I resisting? Am I being kind to myself and my experience right now, or am I being judgmental or angry or somehow, you know, distancing myself? Am I being curious about this, interested in my experience, or am I somehow kind of spacing out, shutting off from my experience? What we experience is transformed when we meet it with loving awareness. So, for example, anger, when met with loving awareness, loses its toxicity. and is simply energy that comes and goes. Anxiety that's met with kindness and acceptance ceases to have its hold over us. Just thoughts and feelings that we see come and go. Craving, when met with loving presence, is bodily feelings and mental urges, thoughts and sensations that come and go. Whatever you're experiencing, you can allow it to be held in loving awareness. Judgment, anger, worry, craving, all of the challenges, all of the difficulties and hindrances that arise in our experience. All of our patterns, all of our hindrances can be held in a container of kindness and acceptance. And when they are, our experience is transformed and it becomes a pathway to freedom from suffering. We move by meeting our experience in this way, in these ways, we move from suffering to freedom. Just intentionally bringing our awareness to our direct experience as it's unfolding with these attitudes that help us to meet our experience wholeheartedly. So I'd just like to finish with a poem, the Peace of Wild Things by Wendell Berry. It says, when despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water and feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. So let's just take a quiet moment before we finish tonight.